Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Falcons Saints is featured in this week's free-to-play Super 6 contest. Download the Fox Super 6 app and make your picks before kickoff Sunday for your chance to win Terry Bradshaw's $100,000. All you have to do is correctly predict the outcome of six NFL games. And for top stories, scores, and more, go to the Fox Sports app. Call and give us your winner and final score for Falcons Saints.
33-23 Saints. Yeah, I'm not going to be right. I have not picked an Atlanta game since the Brady Super Bowl. It is my...
You picked them, just...
I can't get Atlanta right, yeah. Ever. By the way, when I went on Twitter the other day and said that, I'm like, I can't figure out... They're my Bermuda Triangle. My money disappears. You cannot believe how many people told me. They're my Bermuda Triangle. Like, everybody on Twitter was like, instead of ripping me, they're like, yeah, that's the team I can't... Nobody can bet Atlanta.
They're just a very unpredictable team.
Totally unpredictable. So last week, who thought they were going to beat the Raiders by 30?
And look at and think of all the massive leads they've blown, too. They're just a very strange team.
Strange. Greg Jennings, 10 NFL seasons, played a couple of years with Brett Favre, 5 with Aaron Rodgers. He is now joining us live. By the way, Greg called the Niners-Rams game, and he's calling the Rams-Cardinals games. I'll start with the Rams, by the way. So it's you watch this team... And there are games against Tampa, and I'm like, this is as good as anybody in the league, not named the Chiefs. And then you watch them against the Niners, and is it Kyle Shanahan having Sean McVay number? Is it Goff can't play under pressure? When you watch that and you watch them unravel with the Rams as a former NFL player, why are the Rams so maddeningly inconsistent on offense?
Well, I think it's a culmination of both. But I think it had a lot to do with Kyle Shanahan and Robert Saleh and their scheme. Schematically, defensively, the 49ers, they were all over the Rams offensively. They have a tremendous amount of team speed, which you just can't account for. When you look at what the Rams try to do, what they do well, running that outside zone, establishing their run to open up their passing game, to establish that, you have to get those outside zone and those outside runs going. They did not do that against this fast flow 49ers defense. And Fred Warner, with a large part, Greenlaw, like, they have so many guys that can step up and can impose their will on a game defensively for the 49ers that it just really ruffled what they wanted to do schematically from the Rams offense perspective. And then I think, too, Jared Goff is a quarterback that has to play in rhythm.
Yeah.
You get him going early. You get him connecting with his guys, Robert Woods, Cooper Kupp. The running game is going for them. He feels comfortable. He settles in a lot smoother. He's not a quarterback that is going to make plays on off-scripted opportunities. That's not his MO. And I think that's where the Rams struggle when the game doesn't go their way and they don't have that so-called first 15 running as smoothly as they would like to see.
So this is the second year for Matt LaFleur and Aaron Rodgers. And I said this earlier to Greg Cosell. I can watch Aaron's body language. I think there's only been one time this year against Tampa that he looked distraught or uncomfortable. He looks more comfortable. So what you know what they run, you know you've been around Green Bay and Aaron. That's what I see. Why is he seemingly so much more comfortable in year two? What are they doing for him?
Well, a couple of things. He is his second year in the system. But more importantly, they've done what any quarterback and head coach should do when you have a talent like Aaron Rodgers is you've implemented what works best for him, what he wants to have and produce within this offense and plays that he would like to see run. And then collaboratively, you have what you want to do as an offensive coordinator. And Matt LaFleur has been completely open with that. And he said even last year, that was not the case. It was more, it was my offense. But I noticed I had to allow him to be who he's always been. That's what makes quarterbacks, that's what makes any player in this league special, is if they're allowed to be themselves and allow that to translate to the football field. And that's what we're seeing in Green Bay, a culmination of Aaron being able to get his boots, his keeps, moving the pocket, allowing him to run a portion of what he does so very well. But he also knows what the implementation of what Matt LaFleur has brought to the table. It works, and he has bought in 100%.
So Seattle, it's Seattle did something this year so far that I don't think happens a lot, but I think good coaches and good teams can do it. They had a huge weakness, pass rush, and they solved it. They gave up a lot of picks, but they got Jamal Adams. And he plays kind of linebacker. They went and got Carlos Dunlap midseason, and some of their young players, L.J. Collier from TCU, have been coached up. And suddenly, it went from a weakness to they've had more sacks than any team in the league in the last month by five. And I want you to go back to your career, and because I don't think it happens a lot where you find a flaw and it becomes a strength. Did you ever play on a team in Green Bay that you thought, man, this is an issue in camp, and then by Thanksgiving you're like, this is actually one of our strengths?
Well, I don't know if we had such a glaring issue that we were able to bandage the way that the Seattle Seahawks have. We kind of did it in the draft. You know, pass rushing was kind of one of our flaws. We were not able to get pressure on the quarterback, opposing team's quarterbacks. And then you draft a guy like Clay Matthews and everything changes.
Right.
And it just opens up. And what it does, Colin, is for like a guy like Carlos Dunlap, it just opens things up. Once you have a pass rusher and you have a guy that can apply pressure, it's not so much about getting sacks. It's about creating space for one-on-one matchups so that offensive linemen can't double your best player and then you're eliminated with any form of pass rush. They can't do that now. You can bring guys off the edge. Carlos Dunlap, he's going to absorb so much attention, and he allows created space now for the other guys within that defensive line and then that front seven. That's why they have changed the game when it comes to pass rushing. And it's not so much sacks. It is about applying pressure, putting the quarterback under pressure to get rid of the ball quicker than what they would want.
So when you look at Brady's numbers, they're not terrible. 28 TDs, 11 picks, 95 passer rating, 64% completion percentage. They're not terrible. He's been inconsistent. And frankly, Arians and him have never worked together. So like some of it's a pass. When you watch Brady, are we being too critical? Has he actually been pretty solid? What do your eyes tell you, Greg?
My eyes tell me that he's been up and down. He has not been great. He's not been terrible. But when he's been bad, it has been bad. And he looks uncomfortable when it is going bad. And he doesn't look as though he can settle himself because of what they're doing schematically offensively. They don't allow him to just get rid of the ball in the timing that he wants because they want to push the ball down the field. That is not a strength of Tom Brady's. We've all said it. We see it. But I think more than anything, when you have a running game that they have and you really don't rely on it as much, as heavily as you should, and then pass catching out of the backfield for his running backs, he hasn't had that. And that's something that he's been accustomed to. And so with all those variables in one pot, it is going to be hard for Tom Brady in year one. Remember, this is year one, to really be comfortable within an offense that he doesn't. This isn't like Aaron Rodgers and LaFleur in now year two. But in year one, there were some struggles. There were some tug of war, if you will. And that's what we're seeing in Tampa. Yes, Tom Brady's going to always say all things correctly and politically correctly and say, I have to be better. And yes, our relationship, Bruce Arians and I, we're great. But there are some things that I think we will see changed after this bye week.
So it's funny. Arians has been critical of Brady. Mike Tomlin yesterday just ripped his team to shreds. And it's just, I've never had a problem with that. I had coaches that were highly critical and a lot of volume, and it's like, yeah, it's fine. It doesn't work for everybody. And I just, as an aside, did you ever have a yeller or a screamer? Or did you ever have a coach that would call you out, like, publicly and rip you?
No.
You didn't?
No, I've never been on a team that had a coach that would just publicly, really, it's not even the team. It's, he goes at individuals. And that's my only issue with Bruce Arians and the way he approaches it is he singles out players. And once you start singling out players, now what you're setting yourself up to do is every time a player has a bad game, are you going to call him out? Are you going to call everyone out? Is this going to be the trend that you've set? And so when you look at Mike Tomlin, he's fighting two evils, if you will. He has an 11-0 team. He knows they're really good. They played bad. He doesn't want them to drop a game that they can easily win. And that's what we saw yesterday, a game that they should win, and they didn't perform well. He's looking down the road. If we play like this, we will not beat the Kansas Cities. We will not beat the Tennessee Titans in the playoffs. We will not beat some of these teams that we know will give us fits in the playoffs and accomplish our ultimate goal. That's what Mike Tomlin is doing. He's getting ahead of his team having a lull. He does not want that.
Greg Jennings doing the Rams at the Cardinals game this weekend. By the way, the Cardinals lead the Niners, Vikings, Bears by one game for the final NFC playoff spot. So this is a big game. Rams at the Cardinals.
Really big game.
It's a really big game. You're doing great work on those games, by the way, Greg. Thanks for coming on.
I appreciate you, Colin.
You bet. Yeah, that's a big one this weekend. Joy Taylor with the news.
No.
Turn on the news.
This is the Herdline News.
Well, the Clippers did not live up to their very high expectations for the team last year.
Did not.
There's lots of blame to go around.
Lots.
Paul George explained some of his issues with Doc Rivers' coaching style.
Well, the way I was being used, I felt like I was, Doc was trying to play me as like a Ray Allen or like a J.J. Redick, mm-hmm. all pin downs, all like, I can do it, but that ain't my game, right? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I need some flow. I need some mixes of pick and rolls. I need some post-ups.
All that.
Just different touches, you know what I mean? And so it was just, that last season was just hard overall.
All the Smoke podcast, that might be what he felt, but the numbers do not support that.
What do the numbers say?
Well, the numbers say he was used on as a pick and roll ball handler in 32.9% of his total plays last season, which was a career high. Oh. He had the exact same number of post-ups per game in the 2018-19 season in OKC as he did with the Clippers last year.
Oh.
And he had fewer catch and shoot attempts per game last season than he did the season before.
So he's just talking
in
out
OKC.
Of his butt. He doesn't know what he's saying.
Well, that's what he felt like happened.
He felt like that happened.
The numbers do not support that. However, he did say they didn't make enough adjustments during the Denver series. He said, I don't think we deserved it. We were not prepared enough going into it.
Well,
that I would agree with. And the adjustment thing is something else. Like, he said that they just felt like they went into the next game like, oh, we're still up, 3-2. We'll win this one. Oh, we're still up. We'll win the next one. And they never really actually made the adjustments.
How about owning the fact that you didn't shoot well? Owning a little bit of this. A little?
I think a good chunk should go on.
So the data that you provide says that none of what he initially said to those guys on the podcast is true. The preparation thing, I'm not there. So, listen, Denver.
Preparation and adjustments, I can't speak to the numbers
and
for
Denver's
what
good.
You're actually doing.
Yeah, Denver's a good team.
Because we can track that. Denver's a good team. But also, I think a big thing with them is that if you are going to be the star and you're going to get star treatments, then you're also going to get the star criticism. And he's not been great in the playoffs.
Not
Kawhi has proven himself. Kawhi had a down playoff as well, but Kawhi has rings. So we know what Kawhi is. We know what he's capable of doing. He won Canada a championship. So while I do think a lot of blame goes on Kawhi, the bulk of it has to go on Paul George. You haven't proven yourself.
Well, it says here, according to The Athletic, that, and they always say Leonard and George. So both of them had their own security guards and trainers. Both of them had power over the team practice and travel schedule. Both of them didn't speak to the media until at least 45 minutes after the game concluded. So it sounds like a lot of this stuff to me was negotiated before the season started, like with Steve Ballmer, like, I'll come, but me and Kawhi get boom, boom, boom. And the problem with that is when you stink in a series.
And again, I don't have any problem with it. We're in Hollywood. Stars get treatment all the time. There's a reason for that. because you sell the tickets and you sell the sponsorships and people come to see you play and you're getting paid the big bucks. Well, all that comes with big criticism, especially in a city like LA. But when it comes to within the team and the issues that we're hearing, and we heard, this is not like all of this information is now coming out in specifics, but this was discussed immediately after they lost, so that it was a chemistry issue. Immediately we heard from Lou Williams that was what the problem was. We were hearing that during the season.
Yeah.
So this is not, it's just the specifics that we're getting. It's self-awareness. If you're the star and you're going to take this treatment, you've got to spread it around and you've got to make it seem like you're not inconveniencing other people. Like the plane being late, I mean, you can't be late to the plane. You just can't.
No.
You can't.
Pilots aren't.
Like, you're going to get away with it because you're the star. But, like, one time, okay, maybe there was a one-time emergency.
Well, there's not even.
More than once, to me, that's, like, that's unacceptable. It's unacceptable.
Bad.
If you're the other star, if you're Doc Rivers, like, you have to just change it. Like, risk losing them. But you have to set a standard. So I just feel like everything just unraveled. And little things like that pick away at people. So LeBron James agreed to a two-year, $85 million extension with the Lakers. The deal will keep him with the team through the 2022-23 season, which would be his 20th year in the NBA. God. 2023 also happens to be the year that his son Bronny will be graduating high school. So under the current one-and-done rule, Bronny would be eligible for the NBA draft in 2024.
Well, LeBron will be around.
LeBron has said this is one of his goals, that he wants to play with his son. Now, Bronny's a five-star recruit, and he probably wouldn't be considered a true one-and-done prospect now.
What kind of game does Bronny have? What's his game?
I haven't watched a lot of Bronny tape.
He's on the far right there, right?
Yes.
So how old is he right there? 9 or 12? Or how old is he?
16.
Okay, so let me watch his game right now.
He's a sophomore.
So what kind of, is he a two guard? What is he? He looks big.
He's a sophomore. He's got 2 years left. He does play at Sierra Canyon. And
he still
has a lot of years of growing as well. Because as we know, boys grow for a long time.
Well, he's going to be a good ball handler because LeBron is a great ball handler. And LeBron's going to make him.
Doesn't hurt that you have personal access every single day to LeBron James to help you with your game.
No, LeBron will, look, you can tell the ball handling. Yeah,
Well, his fellow classman, Mikey Williams, is regularly puts up 50-point games, and Bronny rarely hits double figures with Sierra Canyon. So he does have some development still to do, but
I'm gonna give
this
a call
is definitely
out.
Something.
Rashad Phillips watches this show. You know Rashad? He's really good at this stuff. Rashad, give me Bronny's game. Go to my Twitter account and put it up there. I want to get the scouting report on Bronny's game.
Well, it's possible, and they are looking to change the rule, the one-and-done rule as well.
That's always been tricky to me. This is where I'm old school. I don't think the NFL uses this free marketing platform called college football, and it helps their sport. I don't like this marginalization that college basketball is bad. I think Zion got a shoe deal because of Duke, and I don't buy this idea that going high school to the pros. I mean,
I think there's massive value for certain players to go to college.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Bronny
has LeBron James. But, so maybe for his game, for his development, it would matter.
But even if LeBron, let's say LeBron had gone to college, he would have won a championship.
Sure.
I think LeBron today would be like, that's one of the coolest things that ever happened to me. I went to blankety blank Duke and won a title.
No, there's no experience like college.
Nothing.
There's no romance that you're going to have with an experience like your college experience.
Cameron Indoor is the most unique basketball experience maybe in America.
I don't think that there's no value. I just think it should be an option because for some kids there isn't. And like Bronny, if he's good enough to go straight to the pros, which right now he's not, but if he was, you have LeBron James. Like everyone in the world knows who LeBron James' son is. So like the marketing aspect doesn't really matter. So Snoop Dogg is coming to boxing on a more permanent basis. We saw him Saturday for the Roy Jones Jr. Mike Tyson fight, and he was a thrill and a delight to all.
Yeah.
And he announced that he's partnering with Triller to create a new boxing league called the Fight Club.
What is Triller? I saw that advertisement.
Triller is like it's like TikTok.
It's the American version of TikTok.
It's like the other TikTok. Yes.
So what makes it different?
I believe Triller has like a relationship with like music artists, so they actually get paid for the music that is used on their platform.
So it's TikTok.
I could be totally wrong because I do not. I'm not a TikToker.
I'm not on Parler or Triller.
I have a TikTok, but I don't like. Don't know what to do with it. But the league will have 5 to 8 events per year and have a mix of boxing and musical acts similar to the card this weekend. Snoop will serve as the host and announcer and will help with fighter and musical art selection and overall production of the events. It's going to be a mix of some celebrities who want to dabble in boxing and some up-and-coming boxers as well.
Okay, so I always had a theory on this. I think I told Dana White this. The UFC, these would never be their best fighters, but take former NFL guys and put them on your card regularly. NFL guys that are athletes, some will go into broadcasting, some will work in football, some are tough guys and they'll fight. The second thing is in boxing, which I think is a little safer in terms of you have gloves. You know, octagon, if you get outclassed, it gets ugly fast.
I mean,
but in boxing,
we saw this weekend, you can't really play with boxing either.
No, but celebrity boxing matches.
So two celebrities who have never fought before. So it's not like this the situation this weekend.
There's a lot of actors I'd like to punch right in the neck.
With Nate. I actually hosted a celebrity boxing thing
in
Miami
it?
A million years ago. I do not remember.
I would like to see some like a liberal Hollywood guy and a conservative guy.
As long as it's both of their first time, because I don't want to see what happened this weekend with Nate and Jake Paul. It was a disaster.
I think Tom Arnold would sign up for a 10-fight card right now with a bunch of people. He's yelling at everybody on Twitter.
I'm not fully against this, actually. As long as they're both amateurs and it's both their first time fighting.
He's screaming all the time at people.
I would watch.
Yeah, so would I. Joy with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Line News. Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
It's the streaming service that has everything you're into. Discovery Plus, Food Network, HGTV, Discovery Channel, exclusive originals coming in 2021, U.S. only. All right, so, you know, I'm into mock drafts, and it's interesting. As the Philadelphia Eagles keep losing, they now have the 6th draft pick, and I think a lot of quarterbacks in this draft, would they go there? So we thought we'd play a game today called To QB or Not to QB, based on there are 5 to 6 quarterbacks. Everybody said could be first-rounders. We have this emerging culture in the NFL where quarterbacks come out of college to the NFL, and they're almost all working really quickly. So let's play To QB or Not to QB. Here we go.
To QB or not QB? That is the question. Whether 'tis nobler in the mind of Cowherd.
All right, the first pick, the New York Jets. QB or not to QB?
I would to QB. Trevor Lawrence is a sensational all-time top 10 prospect. Sam Darnold is averaging 13 points a game, can't stay healthy. I like Sam Darnold, but sometimes in life, everybody needs a reboot. And so I say, get a quarterback, get Trevor Lawrence.
2 QB, I agree.
Yeah, that's an easy one. That's kind of an easy one.
This is probably also an easy one. The second pick, the Jags.
2 QB. So Gardner Minshew is a backup. And that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. But in the end, they just fired their GM. They'll probably fire their coach. So let's just clean house. So Justin Fields.
Yeah, we thought for a second Minshew could make it happen, but no. Yeah,
that's second in it.
All right, the third pick, the Cincinnati Bengals.
This is an easy one. Not to QB. They need a tackle. The best tackle in several years is available. Joey Burrow's good. He'll come back. So that's an easy one.
Agreed. To QB.
Yeah.
This one, it gets interesting. The fourth pick, the Dallas Cowboys.
Now, I know this is not going to happen, but I would say to QB. So Dak Prescott's going to be owned if they franchise tag him. Let me look up the number. $38 million. Okay, this is a roster that is top-heavy. I'm paying Amari Cooper. I'm paying $38 million. Or I can draft a Zach Wilson and trade Dak. Somebody will take Dak. Dak's going to get signed by somebody. This one, to me, I know it's not going to happen, but $38 million for Dak is a load, and I'm not comfortable paying that.
Is someone else going to pay him that for 1 year? Because that's what it would have to be if you trade him. Unless they signed a deal beforehand. I would say not to QB. Right. I'm sticking with Dak for another year.
Right. Another easy one. Fifth pick, the Los Angeles Chargers. QB or not to QB?
I would not be surprised that they would trade down. So not to QB. That's an easy one.
Yes. Great.
All right. Here's where it gets interesting. With the 6th pick right now, the Philadelphia Eagles. QB or not to QB?
It's not interesting. He's been sacked 46 times. once again, I don't even know if it's the strength and conditioning. Can anybody stay healthy on offense? They're not drafting a quarterback. Not to QB.
Not to QB. They have massive injuries, and something's going on with Peterson, the offensive system, and he's been sacked a lot.
With the seventh pick, the Carolina Panthers.
So this is the perfect situation. It's a quarterback. I have two more years of Teddy Bridgewater. I like Teddy. But he's like Alex Smith. He's a grown-up. He'll be an amazing mentor. I can go get a Trey Lance out of North Dakota. I don't want to make him play in the NFL. Teddy, for 2 years, does an Alex Smith. He probably gets us a wild card berth. This is the perfect situation in the NFL. You have a good B quarterback and a good dude, Teddy Bridgewater, and an offensive coach, probably a little more sophisticated offensive system than most teams. I draft a BYU quarterback, and he sits for 2 years. I love, by the way, last year's draft, they went all defense, and they hit some home runs. I love Carolina that hasn't taken a quarterback first round since Cam Newton. I love Carolina taking a quarterback.
I would say not to QB. If you're not 100% sure, you keep building around Teddy for a couple more years.
Eighth pick, Washington, QB or not to QB?
I think a QB. Dwayne Haskins didn't get much of a shot, but he's 3-8, and clearly inside the building, they're not into him, so I'd QB it.
Yeah, to QB.
How about the Lions at number 9?
Well, they're going to have a new GM and a new head coach. I got to be honest with you. This is a real hard one. You know, Matt Stafford hasn't told me if he wants to stay. I think you're better starting from scratch, blowing him out, and drafting a quarterback. And Matt Stafford can absolutely get you a second-round pick. I think I start over and draft a quarterback.
I think they probably should, but it's the Lions, so they're not, and they're forever going to be with Matt Stafford, so I'm going to say not to QB.
How about the team that is the Bermuda Triangle for your wallet, the Atlanta Falcons?
I would absolutely draft a QB. I would you're going to pay Matt Ryan for two more. This is Carolina. So right now, Matt Ryan's the 10th highest paid quarterback and playing at about the 17th best quarterback level. You draft a guy 2 years. Again, they have players. This is what you want. You want a guy like Matt Ryan, who's a grown-up, that a young guy can come in and watch Matt Ryan, a total consummate pro, for 2 years. And then, by the way, in 2 years, Matt will get an offer somewhere, and I have my franchise quarterback.
I think not to QB. 2 years is too long. They're pumping out quarterbacks like this. 1 year of sitting, I get.
All right, last one, because this one is interesting for one of you. The Dolphins at number 11 via the Texans.
It's really hard. Okay, so I'm going to go with this. And I thought a lot about this. Not to QB. Because I do believe Brian Flores believes my defense, the quarterback that fits my DNA, accurate, very few picks, that is Tua. So even if I have some misgivings, he's already been benched and hurt, there'll be four more quarterbacks next year. I think I'd get another offensive lineman and give Tua another full year.
I got to hold. I got to see how the rest of the season goes. I know that's not an option.
But it is interesting. Trevor Lawrence and Josh Allen are who you're going to have to beat. Play them two times a year for the next 12. You're going to have to play those guys 25 times. Trevor Lawrence and Josh Allen.
Yep.
And if Tua's already been benched and hurt, and it's why the NFL's great. See you tomorrow.